Okay, so I finally figured out what was the deal with this, or at least how to make it work. Not totally sure how to make the simulation I wanted to make simulate, but... Okay, so... Here we have, this is the continuous controller. Remember I said I made that work a long time ago. That worked. And I don't know why it's giving me this little warning here. Maybe I messed with things, but that was working earlier this morning. Let's see if it does. Okay, so now let's look at the outputs here. Okay, so this is the output from the continuous controller right here. Not quite sure, somehow I lost my... Oh, here we go. That's where they are. Axis properties, let's change this to... change this to 2. I discovered you have to click in another box to make sure that sticks. So there it is. That's the continuous. And that's actually with pole placement done on the continuous system, which gave me 14.14 and 99 instead of 10.03 and 49.33. Okay. So that worked before. I had showed you that before. So I got to thinking about this, and I decided that what this was doing, you know, in the continuous system, whoops, that's not the one I want. Well, I guess this will work, okay? See, what's happening here is this is actually simulating having an A to D converter going all the time, okay? I mean, this is not, right here when I pull this off, this is actually an analog connection there, right? That's like having an A to D converter, which is continuously converting all the time. It's not like it converts now, gets this thing, and then goes off, right? So, you know, I'm not sure whether, you know, you would need a sample and hold in there to simulate that or not, but... what this does do, and what it actually is not a bad practice to do, is if you take your controller and your program and you make an A to D conversion, okay, and then immediately you put out an output, okay? Remember, that's what we were showing you in that software. You know, you wanted to immediately put out an output just as quickly as possible. And so you did all your pre-computing, everything ahead of time, except for the last little bit that you needed that measurement to do. And so this is simulating that because it's measuring that thing all the time, right? And so this is measuring, this is what you would put, the input you would put to make this thing. Suppose you didn't have a sample and hold, this was just going, this would be like the continuous controller here, right? But now when we put a D to A converter in there, then what this is always doing here is it's always changing the input right here, right? So when this clock actually fires at 0.1 seconds, right, it's going to grab that value, right, and then it's going to hold that value, and it's going to hold it there until the next sample, right? So what value do you want it to grab here? You know, you want it to grab... this is the most recent value you'd like to stick in, right? And so that was computed. So basically, it's kind of like you make a measurement at x sub k, and you put in the input that would be for that at, you know, that kth period here, right here, and you just hold it, and then you do that again when the next time comes around. So this is kind of like continuously computing. You know, the next thing. It's kind of like you were doing a A to D conversion, immediately use that data to send out a D to A, okay? Now that's different from what I was saying we would do over here. Let's look at this other one. Let's see, there it is right there. Now this one right here, I've been fiddling with it to try and make it work. So I put a couple more sampling holds in here to try and see whether that would simulate things or make things work. And it still blows up. But the idea here was, you know, you make your measurement, you get your measurement of X of K, right? And then you can't watch the thing for the next so on, right? You have to wait until the next time, and then you put your D to A, right? And then you measure your A to D right after that, okay? Now, that's probably not so good in real life because when you put this output on here and then immediately measure your A to D after you put in your input, it's actually, you just put in an input that made a little jump like this, right? And so there's going to be a transient response. It takes a little time to respond, right? So that's not so good. It's actually better to make your measurement after, you know, you put in the little jump, right? You let the transient response catch up to where that little jump sent you, right? Then you make your measurement, and then you put in another little jump. Does that make sense? So it's all about when the A to D and when the D to A are operating, okay? And this guy right here blows up. You know, I can show you that. And this is, I stuck these sample and holds on here. It still blows up. In any case, you know, when you run it, you know, you look at it, and here it goes, right? Well, you could, but a D to A doesn't have, it could have a low-pass filter, so you could put a low-pass filter on there, but that low-pass filter then becomes part of your plant, right? In other words, you got a 1 over S plus something, right? And then you have to replace your pole somewhere else, right? So in some ways, adding a low-pass filter like that is adding another analog controller to go along with your digital controller, right? Does that make sense? But, you know, you could do that, but then you really need to, you know, replace your poles. So anyway, this is this one. And if you look at this other one that's doing it this way, this one actually works. Let's find out the output here. What was this window? This one was going into output K, so I need to find that window.
Output, example 7-1, output, palette, output K. There it is. Now that, interesting. Let's check and make sure. Oh, I have the wrong numbers in here. I'm sorry. I was playing with all kinds of stuff. This needs to be 10.
Minus 10.
0.03. I made a sign mistake on my MATLAB code and came out with these numbers. So let's do this. Oops. Let's run this simulation again and you'll see it matches the book pretty close. So here we are somewhere here. There's some hard to read thing, what do we say, axes? Let's make this 2. Look over there, and then here you see that about like what the book had, okay?
So, finally got that thing to work. But, you know, there's some interesting things. How do you simulate this other thing? This other thing wouldn't be quite as good. If you can make an A to D conversion and then you can compute in zero time what the next sample is, you're in great shape, okay? But if you have a slow computer, right, and you have to use that whole sample time to compute your next output, which is actually, I don't know whether that's the case these days, but in the old days that's the way it used to be, right? Then that would be more like that more complicated gadget there. And of course, there are more approximations in that gadget, but I'm not really certain that I've got it simulating right. I mean, I don't think Simulink is doing exactly what I'm trying to make it do, right? What I'm trying to describe. In other words, the idea is you make your measurement, right? It takes you the whole sample time to calculate what the next output is, right? So then you put your output on at the next time, and you make your measurement right after that, you know, immediately after that, and do that. And that's not as good as the other way, but it's still. Andrew.
Can you just put the scope before and after the sample and match the two signals?
Yeah, I could probably do that. I haven't tried that. So if you look at, well, this is the wrong one. Let's go to this other one here. So if I put a scope, let's see, that syncs. You want to see it on the two things on the same graph?
I would mux them in one signal.
Yeah, okay, we could mux them. Let's see, what is that under matrix probably? You see signal routing, yeah, that's it probably right there. Demux. Mux them. So there's a mux. And we want to scope syncs. Just grab a scope here. We can put it down here somewhere. Ah, come on. Oh well. There it is. And I gotta get this guy up to a clock. That's a clock. The question is, where do I want to look here? What did you want to look at, Andrew?
Put the signal before and after the sample hold in that place. Yeah.
Okay, right now, I took out this sample and hold, which I probably need to put back in. I got too many things selected here. Let's delete that. Copy. Paste. Okay, I need to put this sample and hold back in. This is one that needs to be on that clock. Come on. Okay, I need to flip this. Flip that, and then I need to run this guy on that clock, right? Right there. Oh, come on. Escape. There we go. Four, oops, and after. Okay, it's kind of messy, but there's the output, here's the other one. The difficulty is it's blowing up here. Let's change the axes to 2. Okay, that's not the one. Is that the same? Edit, axes properties. This 2, I probably should have called the 2 scope something different. Looks like it's kind of going from something to something. I need an auto-scaling scope here. How do I do that? don't see how to make it auto-scaling. See what happens if we run this. I don't know, it looks like it's going off the limits here. I guess I could send it to MATLAB and or Octave and I mean Scilab and plot it and then do auto scaling. Oh, maybe I don't know. Okay, let's see. One of these guys, what does this do? If I hover over there, it says toggle curve data modification. I'm not sure what that does. Here's help. Toggle data map mode.
This is zoom,
right? This is original zoom, and this is, you can zoom in on something here. I don't know, like that or something. Make you zoom in on that, but that doesn't help. I need an auto-scaling thing, so that what I've been doing is just run it into Workspace and plot it in Scilab, because Scilab's tools are better than the scopes here. But, yeah, I think I could fiddle with that some more and try and figure it out. But this thing right here is less likely to be good, right? I mean, if you can measure the thing and then make a very quick computation and put out your D to A, right, then that's great. But the thing about that is that requires a very fast computer, right? And so then, you know, but it does look like it's more stable, you know, at least in this case. So I don't know. I'm learning some things about this, but I think that's what, you know, when we look back at chapter 3, where we were doing that, you know, maybe it was chapter 2, there was the programming example. You know, it was trying to make the output just as quickly after the input as they could, right? So that's what they were doing. And, you know, with a fast computer, you can do that. And it looks like it works better, at least on Simulink there. So I don't know. There's some questions. Do I really want those sample and holds? You know, I was trying to make it so that in this simulation, it would just grab the thing right now, right? And then I'd do my computations on it, and then it would send it out, and then I'd grab it again. But I don't, you know, I may need to put a tiny delay in there somewhere to simulate the tiny time between reading and putting things out or something. Anyway, the continuous thing does seem to work pretty good, and it does work okay with the, and it does match, you know, the actual simulation with the, you know, doing it this way, grabbing it really quick and make my move then. Okay, so any questions about this 1 over S squared controller? Finally got working, kind of. Okay, let's go look at chapter 4 again. And actually, I did have a controller for this. I did try and make a Scilab for this thing right here. A to D, computer D to A. And that would probably, you know, help you understand at least what Psychos or Scilab is doing by plugging this in. Scilab doesn't have an A to D function in it, doesn't it, Andrew? You just do the same thing I did, right? Simulink. Yeah. Yeah, right. So it has zero order hold.
That, or you just make a discrete controller instead of continuous, and you don't have to worry about it. You can just feed a continuous signal into that.
So you can put a continuous signal into the discrete. That's kind of what I'm doing, right? Mm-hmm. With that, yeah. So, Yeah, I'm not 100% sure how to simulate that in Simulink. I can show you what I started to do, but I don't think it's exactly what.
Okay, let's see here. I did this thing right here. So I put a sine wave into a sample and hold. And then I put a quantized block here.
What does that quantized block do?
Well, that's because, you see, when you make an A to D conversion, you have to, make a quantization, right? You got a 2-bit A to D converter, it's like a comparator. One bit would be like a comparator. 2-bit would have 4 levels, right?
Right, okay.
So you got to do that, so.
Well, no, sample and hold thing doesn't. What sample and hold thing, it'll hold it on any real number, right?
Yeah, so it steps.
Yeah, it steps, but it doesn't step at a discrete value. It might be a 3.141592 whatever,
I see what you mean, okay.
Right? And so it could be at an irrational number or something, whereas this thing quantizes it.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, we could run this thing and you could see what it looks like. See, there's, you can see the quantization here, right? The quantization in that's what this does right here. And then there's the sample and hold, which makes them flat like that.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
So, I think the sample and hold is kind of, can be kind of like an A to D or can be like a D to A, right? And in this Simulink way of doing things, how do you just grab one value and say you're stuck with that value? Well, that's what you have to do with a sample and hold, right? And when you send it out in the real world, that's what the actual waveform looks like. This would be the output of a D to A converter, right? Where you put that sine wave in and you had that many bits, right? I mean, I could add more bits here by changing the quantizer. This is, let's see, quantization step is 0.1. So if I made this 0.01, then it would probably be better, right? Well, you can't really tell because the sample and hold clock is so small here. If I make this sample time, 0.1, and actually it would probably be good to actually plot the real thing there too, so it'd be good to, run a thing over here to that, and I guess, I'd need a mux and so on, but I'm not going to play with that too right now. I mean, you guys can play with that kind of thing and try it out. Okay, so let's go look at this thing here. This is chapter 4. So this is their model of A to D computer, D to A. And mathematically, what happens is you end up with this guy right here, which is the RH of in frequency, and what it is the real R right here, right, which is repeated. It's repeated because you sampled it, right? All those replicas, and then it's multiplied by this sync function. It went down like this, right? And so the zero order hold did that, that thing, the A to D did that, right? And so this is what the output would look like, So that's kind of, signals stuff. And that sync, this is the
sync function filter.
So this would have been the ideal filter, and that's what the sync. And the next replica, the next replica of the thing would have been right here to right there. So this thing where it goes through zero is smashing the middle,
which would be kind of like the DC component of the next replica, right? So it is doing some good stuff for you there, but it's, you know, not like this thing. And, you know, if you think about it in the time domain, you know, you've got these little steps, you know, that's certainly closer than the delta functions, right? It looks a lot more like the regular real signal than those delta functions. And those delta functions really are something we never ever use because we don't have a delta function generator, right? And we wouldn't even want to do that if we could because those are dangerous, right? So it's just a mathematical way of keeping the information. Okay, so here's the zero order hold spectrum, you know. There's the place where it would be. Here's the next one, right? You can see how it kind of smashes those. Now, the next thing that they do in this chapter, which is kind of interesting and somewhat important when you're doing block diagram stuff, we know how to put in the D to A. It's basically that H sub zero order hold transfer function, right? So that's pretty obvious. But what about samplers? When we put samplers in there, how do we get the star? I mean, what is Y star over here? You see, this guy right here is the sampled of this thing went through a transfer function, right? This could be a zero order hold or whatever transfer function you want. And this guy was sampling that guy right there, right? And then that went through this G right here, which, you know, there was a sample thing that went through the G, and we started with a continuous thing, okay? So how could we make a block that would give us, you know, this output as a function of that input? You know, what is the transfer function for this whole mess? And we really haven't done this kind of thing before because we didn't have these guys, right? Does that make sense? Now, I'm not sure in the real world where this would likely happen. I mean, you'd have to have an A to D converter running it through, you know, a computer, right? And then putting it, and this would also have the D to A, the G of S would have to have the zero order hold. So now you're putting out, you know, a continuous signal. That's this zero order holded thing, right? And then it'd run through another A to D converter, right? Then through some computer with a zero order hold on the end to do a D to A, right? So this is a continuous, right? And then you'd have another A to D converter, right? So, I mean, this isn't the likely scenario in real world, but it's still nice to know how do you collapse this whole thing. In other words, what does the transfer function for this whole thing look like? Well, they derive this thing right here. You know, Y of S is right here is H of S times U star of S. U star is the is the Laplace transform of U star of T, which was the sample thing, right? Delta functions, right? And if you think about, you know, this guy right here, U star of S, if you replace E to the S T with Z, then you would end up with the Z transform. So then they said, okay, well, Y star of S, okay, that would be Y of S. Y star of S is the sampling of that, so they put the star on this, right? So what does that equal, okay? So they're actually going to show you that it's equal to U star of S times H star of S, okay? So that means you could take this H transfer function, sample it, bing, 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 right? And that's what you get over here, okay? Whoops. So anyway, they go down here, and if you want to go through the algebra, they show you that works, okay? So finally they get Y star of S is U star of S, H star of S. So what that means is, you know, this was the input, it was sampled, right? And you convolve that with the sampled thing for the H, okay? Now that kind of makes sense because that's actually what we're doing in the computer, right? You know, we take an A to D converter and we get those, basically the impulse thing. That's what the A to D converter gives us. It gives us the areas under each of those impulse functions. We do a discrete convolution, okay?
And when we do a discrete convolution, then we put that out, right? And, you know, if we look at the output of our computer just before the D to A converter, that will be, you know, that will be the discrete convolution, you know, so this kind of makes sense, okay? So that's when, back here, let's re-look at this again. That's when we have, you know, we went through this, okay? That was just this little chunk, right? Okay. So then they apply that, you know, over and over again to finally get Y star of S is E star G star H star. Okay, that's just a, you know, kind of a recursive thing. You know, just doing that thing again. Okay, so now the next question is, and by the way, Y of Z, this is what I was saying about Y of Z, it's related to Y star of S, right? Let's just replace E to the ST with Z. Okay, so, and they usually do Y of Z, you know, after a while. I think that's what they say. They're just going to usually use Y of Z. Okay, now here's a different situation. This is, you have an A to D here and an A to D there, but you have these two guys in the middle here, okay? And so, in this case, when you do it, you get Y star of S, that's the sample, you know, over here, the Z transform here, is equal to, you take E star, that's like the Z transform of E here, right? But then you have to take G and H and multiply them together, right? And then you take the star of that. So it's E star times GH. So whenever you see... whenever you see two continuous blocks together, you need to multiply them together before you do the star, okay? But when you have a thing like this where there's a star here and a star there, then, you know, if you put a bunch of those together, you know, then the stars multiply, okay? So in this case, what we're saying is you have to find the transfer function for these guys, you know, in the continuous kind of a thing here. And then you have to, that's this part, and then you have to star that and multiply it by E star to get the output, okay? So this little business here is actually kind of important. I don't know how to make it clear, but, you know, I think it kind of makes sense that, you know, when you have continuous things, you have to multiply them together, get this to be one big thing, right? And then it's like the last one, right? So this is important for block diagram reduction. And so they give you a procedure here, okay? So here's an example. So we have this control system here. We have a A to D here. The computer, it's doing a discrete convolution in the computer, right? We give you this thing. This is your zero order hold. That's the D to A on the computer, right? And then it goes out to your plant, which is G of S. Okay, that's a continuous plant like our 1 over S squared was, right? And then what you're doing is you're taking the output of this plant, you're subtracting it from the, you know, this is the reference control input to give you an error here, and you're A to D converting the error, okay? So then the question is, what is the transfer function for this whole mess? Does that make sense? I mean, because that's a, you know, the kind of thing we're going to need to do, right? So, it's hard to be nice to be able to see both of these at the same time. Okay, so now you kind of can. So E of S is just R of S minus Y of S. That makes sense. There's no stars there. That's the old-fashioned stuff, right? And get that notification out of there. Okay. So then y of s right here is g of s times u of s. That's also old-fashioned. So this line and that line are both old-fashioned, right? Now, then this line, m star here, is e star d star. M star is e star d star. That's the new fashion. That's the in the discrete domain, right? That's in the computer. And u of s is m star of s times this transfer function right here, okay? This is the zero-order whole transfer function, right? Okay, so let's try and put it all together. So, we're going to need E star right here, right? Well, here's E. To get E star, you just star that whole thing. In other words, you sample the E, right? And so E star is just R star minus Y star, right? This is like saying E of Z is R of Z minus Y of Z. And this is just a repeat of that line right there. And this line right here, U equals M star right here. U star equals M star. Since basically when you put M star into a zero order hold and then you sample it, you get the same thing back, right? Because it holds it at that point. When you sample it, you know, there, you get the same thing back, okay? So U star and M star are the same. And Y star is just GU star. Remember, we had to put those two together, right? Okay. So Y star is GU star. So we find G, here's G, and U star is M star right here, right? And I guess what they did was they need to make this U have to find the continuous for the U. So it's M star times the zero order hold. That's the continuous for the U. And so then they take the star of that to give Y star, because this is Y right here. And then the star of that gives you what they had here, right? So let's see. Okay, so let's go.
They're missing something, though.
Okay. Well, the reason that you can kind of get rid of the zero order hold is this: if I take M star is basically going to be these points right here, right, and the zero M star with the zero order hold will give me, I mean, what shall I say? If I take M star and run it through a zero order hold, I get a thing like this, right? And this point was the value on the M right there, right? Those points there, right? So now if I sample this thing with an impulse function, multiply it by a string of impulses like here, right? Then I get the same thing as if I did the real thing like that, right? So if this is M of T right here, then M star of T is the thing with the, you know, is M of T times the delta functions. And, you know, K, all K right here, right? So that's M star. So that's, you know, you multiply this continuous thing like that. And that's going to equal the same thing as this D to A output right here. Right? And what is that? That's like M, that's like the inverse transform, you know, Laplace inverse of the zero order hold, which is 1 minus e to the minus ts over s times M of s right there. Right? If I take this guy, you know, this is what happens with a zero order hold. It gives me this, you know, that guy right there. Which is, you know, basically this is like a pulse. You know, this is like that pulse. it's this, this like a pulse that's one high that's this big convolved with that delta function there, right? And it gives you this little pulse here, and convolved with that one gives you this little pulse right there. So what it's saying is that if I was to find, if I took this thing, if I took that thing and I sampled it like this, you know, delta of t minus kt, then I would get the same thing as I got up there. Because these points where we sampled it are identical here. Does that make sense? See how best to explain this here.
I guess if it's not doing anything, then why do they include it in part of the function?
Okay, so what I'm saying is, if I take this m star of s times that right there, okay, and then I star that, I should get the same thing, just m star again back. Is that what they're saying here? They say, where did they say it here?
Scroll down a little bit.
Down a little bit here. They say u equals m star. So u is this, right? So if I find u star, that means I star this, right? That means I sample u. U is this thing right here, this square thing, right? If I sample that, I get the same thing as if I sample the continuous thing, which is just m star, right? So that's what they're saying here. They're saying, since the samples of u and m are the same, in other words, since they're the same right there on the, you know, so that means that u star is m star. That means if I star this whole mess right here, I get those samples right there.
Okay. And then with the next equation, with 455, then they include that again when they sample y.
Yeah, but they had to put g in here. You see, it's g times u, right? Okay, so the G is in there this time, and I can't say that this time, right? Because, remember, you have to do this multiply before you do the star. In other words, this is a continuous thing, and this whole thing is a continuous thing. Both of those things need to get multiplied together before I can do the sampling. So that's why they put in the G and this, and then they star it. Now,
order of operations, I guess, because u is already a sample function.
No, u is not. U is a continuous function. It looks like a sampled function because it's an output of a D to A converter, but this thing is continuous. In other words, it's not a thing with delta functions. The things that are sampled are stars or delta functions. Okay? And so that's the difference, you know. When you put it through the D to A, that's actually back out in the continuous world again, right? Okay, so this star is the active impulse modulating, and then Laplace transforming, okay? So in this equation, M star, e to the minus 1 minus e to the minus TS may be taken outside the star, since they're already impulse sampled. Okay. Now, what that means is, one is periodic in the frequency domain, okay? It's the same. In other words, you can move it over by, you know, 1 over t, and you get the same thing again, right? And e to the minus ts is also periodic with period 1 over t in the frequency domain, right? So if you put in s as j omega, and omega is 2 pi f, this becomes e to the j 2 pi f t, right? And that's periodic in the frequency domain. So that means both of those guys, if they're periodic in the frequency domain, that means that they're both already equivalently sampled. Okay. So what they say is they can take those outside here. Okay. And so that leaves the M star you can bring outside too. So that leaves G of S over S. Okay. Okay, so Y star is, and they brought these guys outside, right? And then they had to sample G of S over S. Okay? And so that's kind of showing you what the effect of this the sample and hold is. It ended up giving you, it changed your plant by this factor of, you know, 1 over S, right? And so then they put the whole thing together with all the stars, and they end up finally, you know, just doing their algebra, they end up with Y equals DG R minus, well, finally they get down here, y, this is the Z transform, is DG 1 plus DG. And this G, as they call this G star, this whole mess right here, okay? This is not the same as this G star, okay? Does that make sense? They changed their notation. Kind of a naughty thing to do, I think. But they said, they're going to call this whole thing, make the definition, this guy equal G star. So that's when you do that with the G star, you end up with that thing right there, okay? And this G star is really, it's this guy right here with, you know, S replaced with, what is it? Or E to the, Z became E to the ST. You know, so you can change, figure out what S is there. So this is the whole Z transfer function right there. So here's another example. Okay, so consider the same block diagram, and G of S is 1 over S plus 1, so it's just a low-pass filter, okay? And they want the sampling time to be 0.5 seconds, and they're going to use a backward rectangular integrator, and the D to A is modeled as a zero-order hold, okay? So what they did was they changed this G of S into essentially, so they're taking the Z transform of the difference equation of this guy right here, and they made this backward integrator right here basically represents that same guy right there, okay, using the backward integrator just like we did before. So they end up with this guy right here. And so they end up with an M of Z over E of Z, which was the D of Z from before. Let's just go back and look up at this thing, and you can see. So M of Z over E of Z is D of Z. So they've got that thing figured out now. So then, you know, they just solved it using algebra there. And now they find G of S over S, which is, you know, this and that, right? And so they take the Z transform of G of S over S. Here. What we'll do is we'll continue on with this example next time, and then we're about done with this chapter here, I think. So next day we'll look at the examples here again.
You're running the 10 tomorrow.
Did I say again?
Yeah, they want the 10 tomorrow.
So one more meeting in the single office.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it initially due tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's initially due tomorrow.
So I tested